So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Review Man.
You ever wonder what it's like to be a WWF superstar?
For most of us, it takes several years to earn the right to call ourselves WWF superstars.
On WWF Tough Enough, 13 very lucky men and women given the chance to see if they have what it takes.
Two people will actually win WWF Superstar contracts.
This is a hell of an opportunity. They better not take it lightly. We don't. And that's why we'll all have a hand in their training.
And it all started by sending in a 3-minute video.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock alongside Wei Ting. Another week, another show.
Yeah.
Have you recovered yet from travel fatigue? Which I'm going through?
Yeah, I think so. I think I have.
I don't want to get onto any mode of transportation that's taking me any further than 15 minutes away till we go to WrestleMania next year.
Mm.
That was my goal over the next. That's definitely not going to happen. 1,000% that's not going
to
happen.
You won't be going to North York.
Oh boy. Soon. Well,
to see
depends what traffic is like. Okay, we'll make it 30 minutes for my my family.
Okay,
30 minutes. That's my max.
I guess you won't be going to Buffalo anytime soon.
Oh, I was never going to Buffalo anytime further.
What? You're not. How are you going to stop yourself?
From Buffalo?
Going to Buffalo.
You know, one of the more...
Going to Wegmans.
Wegmans, the outlet mall. There's an Olive Garden there. Mm-hmm. Me and my buddies once decided one random Boxing Day to drive to Buffalo. I don't know why, but it was just...
The perception is that the deals are better.
There's no deals.
No.
Boxing Day is the biggest myth.
Especially now. They don't even have Boxing Day. You're actually leaving, getting away from Boxing Day.
Well, we weren't there going there for sale. It was more just someone had the idea for a road trip, and let's do it on one of maybe the busiest days of the year. And we ended up going there, and we watched the Sherlock Holmes movie, which was a terrible movie. I remember I fell asleep for the last hour of it.
The one with Robert Downey.
Yes, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's two out. I don't care about Sherlock Holmes. I don't want to segue off and talk about Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, let's not.
How
do
are
that.
You?
Doing all right. Doing good. Great.
You got coffee.
Actually, I got
this is a new one. You never get an aroma.
Well, that's because it's not a coffee. It's
it's
a matcha latte.
Oh, what's all that green stuff? It looks like
it's green tea. Matcha. Green
wow.
tea.
Matcha.
Yeah.
Is that like the lyric in Rusev's theme song? Rusev Machka.
That's really funny. Nice. Good one.
What have you done since Monday? Have you finished Daredevil yet?
I have. Yeah,
can we talk about it now? Is it a
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we should talk about it.
Apparently something big happened on Grey's Anatomy last week, which I'm about to ruin.
Okay.
Did you ever watch Grey's
Anatomy? Spoiler alert.
If anyone listening to this, A, is a Grey's Anatomy fan, you're not my priority. And B, it happened on Thursday. What? What's wrong?
What's up with your shirt?
What's wrong with it?
Oh, okay. It looked like one of the buttons was tied different. No, before it was like this was like up here. So it looked like
what's in your matcha? Is that tea?
Anyway, continue.
So anyway, it happened on Thursday. When is the appropriate time that we can talk about the death of one of the main characters?
I mean, it's different now, I feel, because a lot of people PVR, you know, and especially in the case of Daredevil, it might be a thing where people
isn't this how you do a spoiler? Like we announced what we're about to spoil.
Okay,
and
yeah,
we have some.
Yeah,
preamble.
I think it's fair game now.
If you're still listening right now and you don't foresee what the next words coming out of my mouth are going to be regarding Derek's death, then how much sympathy could I possibly have for you?
Yeah, I'm not even going to start the show.
Have you heard of McDreamy on Grey's Anatomy?
No, who's that?
He's been there since the very first episode in 2005, I believe.
Who plays McDreamy?
I can't remember the actor's name. Derek Shepherd.
Okay.
I used to watch Grey's Anatomy. It was one of my favorite shows for the first like 4 or 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got sick of it. And every year, I always assume it's done and there's another season.
Yeah.
So they killed off a major character.
Oh, wow.
And there's a petition now to bring him back.
Hmm.
They want it to make – this guy wrote out a whole like synopsis to the writer about how they can reverse this. And since his name is McDreamy, that it was all a dream. It's like, no, that sucks. That sucks.
If only life was that simple. You know, if somebody dies, like a loved one
dies.
There's
a petition.
Yeah. Like in the afterlife, you know, maybe they're watching us like it's a TV show. And then they'll just like petition them, bring somebody back.
It's like a video game. You get a. Is someone going to put in the quarter to play your life again?
Mm. Ooh, deep.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be cool if you could bring someone back to life, but you have some kind of control over them.
Yeah.
This sounds like a really horrible movie that should be made. This could be like the sequel to They Live.
Mm-hmm.
They die, and then they live again.
They should make a sequel. Like, Piper should just go off on his own and make a sequel. You know,
Roddy Piper is a fascinating human being. I don't think he even needs a character.
Yeah.
Oh. Right. So you don't watch Grey's Anatomy?
No.
Okay. You're just fine with Way's Anatomy.
No.
What did you think of Daredevil? That's what I wanted to ask you before all this.
Okay. Yeah. So should we give another spoiler alert for people that fast forward?
Well, we are
talking
about Daredevil, which has now been released for 3 weeks.
Okay.
There were 13 episodes, and during episode 13, he was given the suit.
Spoiler. Huge spoiler.
Oh, boy. The suit he is synonymous with, he gets.
Yes.
It's like, oh, Superman was given the S at the end of the season.
Well, overall, what I think about the show, I thought it was excellent. I thought it was, man, I think it's, like, better than... You know, even I'd say most of the movies that have come out from Marvel, and I loved all the movies.
Yeah, we were listening to Kevin Smith's podcast on it.
Yeah, Kevin Smith, what is it, Fat Man on Batman. Doesn't talk about Batman this week. He talks about Daredevil.
Yeah, and I mean, they brought up some great points. The fact that here on Netflix, you have this great model where you can write the entire season. You know you're getting a whole season. Whereas some, it's, you know, you're writing 4 episodes in. You don't even know if the series is going to see the end of season 1.
Or they'll change things according to public reaction, much like professional wrestling.
Ugh. The worst.
Well, you think pro wrestling should be written a year in advance?
I think it could use some structure.
Mm, I think so, too.
I think sometimes that that ability to adapt on the fly can be both good and bad.
They do try to do that. I mean, they tried to write Roman Reigns, you know, 6 months out and didn't really – fans just weren't really buying into it.
Well, I mean, with Roman Reigns, it's like, first of all, he comes back in – after his injury. And, I mean, what were really the –
We should give spoiler alerts for pro wrestling, actually, in case you've saved up WrestleMania and haven't gone back to watch.
Yeah, how does it not apply to WrestleMania?
I don't know.
What if someone's saving it? It's on the network and they haven't watched it. They're only up to Fastlane.
And they just decide to listen to I guess this review you could listen to without watching the current product. But anyway, spoiler alert, Roman Reigns loses at WrestleMania.
We had so much to talk about on Monday night that I avoided talking about this. So I want your reaction to TNA's announcement that Billy Corgan is joining their creative team as a senior producer.
Hmm.
And He is stating that he wants to make more complex characters, bring in more taboo topics that are not typically are not stories that pro wrestling really lends itself to and tells.
What exactly does that mean, senior producer? How many of those are there, like, in the back?
Well, the way that it sounds, that John Gaborik is the executive vice president of television. So he is the overseer of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Corgan is your senior producer. And then you have writers like David Lagana, Matt Conway.
So David Lagana is going to have to listen to Billy Corgan?
Well, I don't know what the pyramid structure looks like, but it appears that Billy Corgan is kind of overseeing this team,
right?
But answers to John Gaborik. That would be my assumption.
Interesting. I'm curious. You know, we know that he's a big wrestling fan. He's had his own experience operating his own company, and I'm curious. I mean, I feel like this might be as much as of a publicity stunt, you know, to give some press to TNA as anything. But I think. Why not?
I certainly have my reservations. I will keep an open mind. But when you
why? Let's
go to this this release. We have Corgan, leader of the innovative group Smashing Pumpkins, has joined Impact Wrestling as senior producer, blah blah blah. He'll be working with all this talent. Impact Wrestling, which airs on Discovery Communications Destination America Cable Network. Rather than trotting out the same old heels and baby faces, pro wrestling argot for bad guys and good guys, Corgan thinks fans are ready for new stories. This is a tremendous opportunity to really go into fresh new directions, explained Corgan. Having characters who explore race or transgender issues is certainly a possibility. There are ways to explore those themes in ways that are productive, create new stars, and show that value-based baby faces, no matter what their background, no matter where they come from, can draw new audiences and inspire people in new ways.
I feel like we've had a lot of race and transgender issues in pro wrestling's history.
Yes, not so much progressive, but they do
not
exist.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I feel that whenever we have someone come in and says, I've got the new idea of pro wrestling, it's like they say all these things that fans always assume the best and are optimistic
about. But I'm sure that they themselves are optimistic in that way too. I don't think anybody comes in, you know, just wanting to do a bad job. I think everybody sees problems that they can fix, and I think everybody comes in with good intentions. But the execution with that big of a staff, with, I don't know, just the complexities of what goes on backstage, that's the difficult part.
TNA is betting that it can bring new fans to the arena by giving a stronger nod to cultures with growing influence in American society. It's a tactic that big advertisers ranging from Coca-Cola to General Mills have adopted in their last few years, running commercials featuring families from a wider range of backgrounds and using multiple languages.
Cool.
My first thing I would think of there would be if you are trying to reach more diverse ethnicities.
Yeah.
That seems something that would be requiring one of these ethnicities to be represented.
On the staff?
On your creative direction.
Maybe. I don't know. Not necessarily.
If I were to say that I am going to reach out and make this into making our show more appealing to the Asian community.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to use you. I'm going to rely on what I know.
But I mean,
I would say that's short-sighted on my part.
But am I a writer? Like, am I qualified?
Is Billy Corgan?
He writes lyrics.
He does write lyrics.
Yeah.
He owned a independent wrestling company for a few years out of Chicago, and he's a big fan.
Well, listen, I don't think it's part of his mandate, but I think it just seems like he wants to make a good TV show, and in addition, maybe tackle some of those issues. And I don't think you have to be a visible minority, to be able to do that.
I'm not condemning this at all. TNA needs something because the status quo is not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
They are just existing. I enjoy Impact most weeks, but it's just a show that is doing its audience and they're not growing.
Yeah.
They're not growing at all.
Yeah.
I'm fine with taking diverse approaches. I'm glad that they're going in the direction of someone who it's at least, hey, let's see what he can do versus somebody that has continually failed.
And he's a genuine fan. It's not like some Hollywood guy coming in, you know, with no pro wrestling experience. He seems like somebody who's respectful of, you know, the history of professional wrestling and, you know, you would hope knows what makes good wrestling. The thing I want to actually see him tackle is the music, you know. How about some more diverse musical styles? for the opening themes.
That might be, maybe that'll be his first project.
Sure.
Maybe instead of entrance music, they're going to have...
It should just all be a Smashing Pumpkins music. Like, just everybody, every song that they've ever done.
Yeah, next year's lockdown will actually have rats in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
The Rat Division.
Tonight, we got a pay-per-view. We should stop.
Boy. We make all these references, and it really tells you, like, Billy Corgan is certainly... He was part of pop culture a generation ago.
Yeah, so.
Maybe Zwan will perform.
Whoa, it should all be Zwan songs. Never
Zwan song.
Should only be Zwan.
I had that album.
Did you?
I didn't pay for it, but I had that album.
Cool.
I was given it for free. Nice. At the
You'll probably get a chance to interview him at some point.
Who says I haven't already?
Oh.
No, I don't know.
There you go.
Maybe. We'll see.
I'm sure he would not want to talk about music at all when you're interviewing him about TNA.
Oh, we can talk about professional wrestling.
Yeah.
I would love to chat with him about mm-hmm. pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask him, who are you writing for?
Sure.
I think that's a question many promotions should sit down and ask themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
I hate hearing that answer. Well, we try to appeal to everyone. It's like by trying to do a little bit for everything, instead you do a whole lot for nobody.
Yeah, I mean, if I have any concern about a statement like, you know, like that article, I feel like sometimes, yeah, pro wrestling might try to accomplish too much, think too deeply, you know, when I think pro wrestling, it's actually a very simple art form. And when it's the best, it's often the simplest.
And this is a company that, you know, they have looked at very successful projects, you know. Sons of Anarchy was a tremendously successful show. So the idea was, well, how do we replicate that and take that into our... Like, what a horrible segue that was
mm-hmm.
of taking something that was popular and incorporating it into wrestling.
Yeah.
So when people say, oh, I want to see more diverse characters like on Breaking Bad, you know, you're talking about the principles that make these strong characters, that are involved in storytelling, that are involved in long story arcs, and not simply, okay, well, then we need a meth dealer on Impact.
Who would play Heisenberg on TNA? Kurt Angle.
Shark Boy? Kurt Angle.
Bald.
Yeah, maybe that'll be. Kurt Angle is given a horrible diagnosis.
Why Shark Boy?
I don't know. I thought of a bald...
like a Shark Boy, Walter White?
His new nickname will be Narc Boy, and he'll be...
Narc Boy.
He'll be working nice. He'll be working undercover okay. to... Who would be Jesse? Spud?
Yeah. British Jesse.
British Jesse.
Yeah. It would... No, Jesse Godders. Or Robbie E. would be Spud.
Well, now we know what the E stands for. That's their nice. Dealer.
Okay.
These are horrible ideas, all of which have a 50-50 shot of coming to fruition, maybe. But it's effective immediately. So the next set of television tapings is in 2 weeks. And that television, beginning May the 8th, I believe,
okay.
You're going to see that influence.
Better question. When does Billy Corgan become an on-screen authority figure?
June 8th or May 8th?
That's the date. He's going to come out.
Yeah.
I want to see Billy Corgan play a heel, whatever, manager, general manager. How long before we get Billy Corgan in a match?
I don't care, but the biggest beneficiary of this news is Review and Impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Fight Network.
That's right. You'll get to see all of it
yep.
unfold on our Canadian version of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's still Americans that are very confused why they can't watch Impact on the Fight Network.
No,
the
it's
US.
Still on Destination America there.
Yes. Well, that takes us into Tough Enough. Episodes 1 and 2 from 2001 on the WWE Network. God, this felt like I was watching a show that was 14 years old. This felt really old.
It actually does, eh? The production, the fact that it's in standard and not HD.
Oh, even like I found it jarring to watch people on a normal landline phone.
Really?
Like it was so well, like
who has those anymore?
It was just so funny to watch actual landlines being used. I mean, when was the last time you used a proper telephone?
Probably like in this. There's one in this room for one.
Oh, that's
like we're looking at one right now.
That example, you and me. But I mean, outside of the studio.
Outside of the studio? I mean, at home, my parents still use landlines.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my parents are, technology for them stops at maybe 1995, you know? I try to teach them about, like, I'm trying to, I kind of, I negotiate their, like, cable deals and all that, and,
Negotiate?
Well, like, I mean, I renew them, and there's a real negotiation process, believe it or not.
Do you really put your foot down?
Yeah. Yeah, you try to bargain.
Do you threaten the Rogers?
Yeah, always.
That's always trick. A great tactic to use.
Anyway.
Because that's the last thing they ever want.
But anyway, you know, I mean, nobody our age really even, I shouldn't even say this, working at a TV channel, but I mean, people don't really have TV anymore. You do. Actually, a lot of people I know do. But a lot of people I know also do not. And I mean, my parents really just watch a couple channels, and I'm like thinking about the possibility of whether or not they'd be able to survive on like some type of Netflix thing. And there's no way. Like, my parents are, like, in their 70s. They can't figure that stuff out, so they're stuck with TV.
I think there's certainly, you know, a growing amount of people that are, you know, cord cutters. I don't feel it is necessarily the death of television that everyone believes it's going to be.
TV will change. I mean, the way you...
It will change. It will adapt. But the idea that
the way you
in 20 years we're not going to have... network television that cable will not exist, anything like that. I see it as an alternative that television will have to adapt to, but is not going to be driven out by.
No, but I think the market will get smaller and smaller as the what they call the over the top model gets bigger.
I still see, you know, pay per view is always the one that people go. It's like, oh, it's a dying industry, and it's like, what a week to talk about pay per view being a dying industry than this week, where they are going to shatter records on Saturday.
Live sports is always, you know, I think the one thing that still people want to watch. You know, you can't watch it on a delay. You can't watch it on PVR.
Are you watching the fight this weekend?
Yeah, I'll be working here, so
I'm so excited to watch this fight.
You know, I'm surprised that the hype hasn't really been bigger than it.
I think it's substantial.
I don't think it's huge. You know,
what do you think this show is going to do? Just guessing. You know,
when was what did the last Floyd and Pacquiao fights do?
I mean, nothing to where this one it's going to do. I mean, Manny Pacquiao actually his last pay per view fight didn't do very well at all. He was fighting in China. You know, Floyd's done – I think the best comparison would be Floyd and De La Hoya from 2007. That did 2.4 million buys. Then Mayweather and Canelo did 2.2 in 2013.
Wow.
So okay. These two – I mean, I guess the number everyone's looking at is 3 million. If it can hit 3 million, I feel that it has a chance.
I think so too.
That's incredible. 100 bucks a pop.
The biggest show ever.
3 million buys.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. The weigh-ins, they are selling – they sold out – or at least they've sold 10,000 tickets to the weigh-ins, sold them. They were 10 bucks each. There's closed circuit in Vegas that it's hard to get tickets to. It's just amazing how much money this fight is going to generate.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yep.
I have no point to make.
No, it was a nice thought.
Tough enough and telephones is how we got onto this. The biggest thing I take away from this way is that this was essentially watching, like if TNA were to start their own reality show, they'd essentially have this cast.
Oh, that's right.
Minus Taz, I guess, at this point.
Oh, that's so true.
So the show starts, the first episode was a 1 hour, the casting call episode where we got to see. But the WWF, they just love to do their montage of horrendous tryout videos, which we're now getting this time around for the upcoming Tough Enough.
It's not even so much the WWE. This is just sort of a reality TV trope that you see at the beginning of every casting call session. And when did Survivor come out?
2000.
2000, okay. But of course, like MTV was, you could say, you know, was even ahead of them.
With the real world.
Yeah. So... You know, clearly people that are very well versed in creating reality TV. But I mean, watching this, it really felt like a 2000 era or a late 90s MTV show, you know, just the really cheesy openings with the fast pace, you know, poorly acted reactions. Like this, the show starts off and it's like Hunter, it's China walking through the backstage area.
This is a hell of an opportunity. They better not blow it.
Delivering these really scripted lines, and the camera's all like a lot of what they call canted angles, like a lot of crooked angles.
Like, it's wild.
The
best
rebellious.
One was as they're piecing together like what contestants have to do. They needed to get a soundbite of someone explaining how they have to send in a 3-minute video, and who better than The Undertaker to explain this?
Yeah. And this was The Undertaker.
Biker
Taker. Biker, yeah.
Yeah, so they had a bunch of cameos at the beginning. I think as well, you watch this with 2015 eyes, I think people are much more cynical towards reality television and mm-hmm. kind of a better understanding of what it actually is. Whereas in 2001, I think this was a cool concept to do if you were a WWF fan and watch mm-hmm. this kind of a show that's a bit more open to just there is no illusion of pro wrestling, of what it is, what it yeah. isn't. It's like this is a fascinating part about training untrained performers to be talent.
That was, I think, the first thing that I really took notice of when watching the show. I mean, when they announced the reality show for the WWE, I really didn't think anything of it. But then you watch it, and I think the most jarring thing was the fact that they really didn't try to hide, you know, for the first time, really didn't try to hide, you know, what the art of professional wrestling was. Like, you know, you have trainers here freely talking about the selling, you know, what it means to do that. And I thought it was really refreshing, you know, at the time.
Yeah, and it was certainly met with a lot of resistance, or at least just criticism from a lot of the guys on the roster of the fact that they were going to give a contract to somebody that had never done professional wrestling before. And, you know, the idea that, you know, we're going to make a wrestler in whatever amount of time it was, 9 weeks here on this show. And they had developmental at the time, but the winner of this was going to be thrown onto the roster mm-hmm. almost immediately.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at that scenario and very different. It's like, here's a great chance. We're on MTV. There's certainly an interest for this kind of a show. But at the same time, if you're a performer with the WWF, you probably had a completely different view of what this show was, exposing your business even in 2001 mm-hmm. and giving someone a contract.
Yeah, and I think in hindsight, you know, I don't know what expectations they had of the winner coming out of this show, but in hindsight, all of these reality shows, and this includes, you know, The Ultimate Fighter, I mean, especially with, you know, the last season of Tough Enough that amounted to nothing, these are clearly more an excuse to produce a TV show and less about finding your actual next big star.
So they showed us there were 4,000 tapes they claimed had been submitted, and then there was a casting call at WWF New York, and they showed highlights of the videos, which included Nydia, Josh Matthews, Fat People, strippers, North Carolina wrestler Champagne was actually featured in this. And one guy who proclaimed that, "I am here because God sent me. I am the wrestling pastor." And as I'm watching all these people, I swear to God, Way, you could have said this was an autograph session. You could not tell if these people, apart from just regular everyday fans at WWF New York, some of which just looked like they were trying, I don't even know, but the appearances of some were, it was rather amusing.
A lot of the people they showed were clearly just, you know, fans. And it's like the first episodes of every season of American Idol. You know, you have guys that clearly they look in the mirror and there's no way that they think that they have a chance of making it. But I think a lot of them just like want to do it, at least appear on this opening episode.
And they would have their tryout in the ring with your panel consisting of Al Snow, Taz, Jacqueline, Kevin Dunn was there, John Gaborik was there. There were brief shots of Jonathan Coachman, Mick Foley, Michael Cole, and
a lot of XFL merchandise. Too.
All over the place.
Taz wearing this New York, New Jersey Hitman jersey.
And that John Gaborik wearing this big like XFL sweater later on.
Yeah.
Boy,
2001. What a year that was. Mm-hmm. If you were just a WWF fan and the XFL, and yeah, actually by the time this show premiered, the XFL, their first season was done, and I think the XFL would have been done at this point as well. I think they had officially announced it wasn't coming back for season two. Mm. They were going to get more mileage out of Tough Enough than they would at the XFL.
Yeah,
but incur much more losses. So I guess the standouts that we got to meet that would eventually make it onto the show, there was, of course, Nydia, who's 21 at the time, who just gets gassed during the exercise portion and gets grilled by Taz, who's essentially just playing the hard ass throughout this whole series.
The drill sergeant. And I thought Taz was excellent at that role. I mean, he basically plays, you know, the Simon Cowell, the guy who's brutally honest, but except in this scenario, he's also a lot more physical too and a lot scarier. And I thought Taz, for somebody who, you know, on the roster, even at this time, was really underwhelming, I thought he really was captivating on
this
show.
As much as this show is looked back on for Al Snow, mm-hmm. and, you know, how great he came off on this show, I was equally as impressed. I remember watching this show with Taz, that you watch this, it's like, this guy is just a great promo, and the audience was always into this guy.
Yep.
Even when he was not featured, he was not pushed. That music hit, and he was always over to a degree during his WWF run.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'd say mainly due to nostalgia at that point. But here, you know, where his size is not that big of an issue, it's his personality is just so big and, like, very intimidating. So Nydia here, even though she, you know, fails, kind of doesn't do that well in her physical test, she's able to, like, kind of chirp back at Taz, you know, and, like, you could see her personality is there, even though her physical aspects might not be up to par.
Also notes that she pierced her own nipples.
Yeah, and she also talks about later how she used to strip.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which was kind of came a bit of a background for her character with Jamie Noble.
Sure.
She was an exhibitionist. We meet Daniel, who notes that, I'm different because I'm Asian, and he's here to do his race proud.
Yeah.
If this guy made the show, he would have just reviewed this whole season. Way.
No, we wouldn't have.
This guy could have been a great, great star for this company.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Instead, we just got some generic guys into this house that we could have been.
This guy is pretty generic. Like, there's no reason this guy would have been hired except for the fact that he's Asian.
Which is enough for some.
Yeah.
Josh Matthews. The world is introduced to Josh Matthews, a man that would have maybe he would be the most noteworthy alumni of this season of Tough Enough.
I'd say Chris Nowinski, you know, Maven, they all kind of gone on to
tell
their own stories.
They had their time in the company, but in terms of longevity, I mean, is Josh Matthews,
right.
14 years later, and he's had a job every single year since Tough Enough in the industry. They even interviewed Josh Matthews' parents. Don't think he has a great chance of winning this whole competition.
Yeah.
Like, he's pretty small, but whatever. Get this shit out of his system. And Josh is just so awkward on this show.
Yeah. He's a 20-year-old kid here, and he's just like, he basically is portrayed as sort of like the nerd, the tiny Rudy. He's Rudy.
He is Rudy.
Yeah.
And Taz cuts a promo on him. And what a...
Man, what an interesting, scenario.
So, you know, when Taz said that him and Josh had a falling out, little did we know it was 14 years ago, maybe, at WWF New York.
It's amazing because, like, this is what you would assume would be the first meeting between the two, caught on camera.
Yeah, it would be. So, as of this moment, Josh Matthews' first ever appearance on camera and Taz's last appearance on camera with Josh Matthews. They're
wait a second.
They're
what?
Linked together. Okay, the first time we've ever seen Josh Matthews on camera,
yes,
was with Taz.
Yes,
and the last time we've ever seen Taz on camera
was with Josh Matthews.
Taz hasn't been on television since. In fact,
that's weird.
So if we never see him again, these two will always be linked.
That is just
they have bookended each other's careers.
That's just
in
like
wrestling,
like a weird oblong shaped circle.
Yeah, this is the deep kind of stuff that Billy Corgan wants to be able to tell. Other ones that...
But Taz here basically is just destroying Josh, calling him a pussy in front of this crowd. And Josh here, like in the interview narrating this, says Taz says it was like sort of a thrill to get yelled at by Taz.
His favorite wrestler.
He's his favorite wrestler. Little did he know, he'd commentate next to the guy.
We meet Victoria, who's a stunt woman. Another woman named Tara, who says her nickname is Terrible, which was sounding where this audition was going, but instead cut a very strong promo about the WWF missing a big bitch like her. Mm-hmm. And they noted that she was a great promo, but terrible body.
Yeah, and you know, you see the criteria here, and they basically look at you from a physical standpoint and also a personality standpoint, and you can see that a lot of these people, even though physically they might not be great, their personalities would make up for it.
I wonder what the process is going to be like for this next season of Tough Enough when it comes to evaluating talent and how harsh they will be in this current environment of just, for instance, running down a woman for being overweight.
They won't do that. And I certainly don't think you'll even get a character like this Taz character, you know, or build
I think you'll get a much more sanitized version of the WWE as this happy place and trying to equate themselves to be like Disney as opposed to this rough industry full of hard men and breaking people down and fuck you, you're fat.
Especially the second episode that we're about to talk about, I definitely don't think they'll be able to get away with a lot of the things that they did.
I mean, like falling on rocks?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So other ones, we have William, who was a 23-year-old, noting how his father had passed away. His dream is to be a role model for people. And Jason, who has a girlfriend, and then they cut to this. They're asking him what it's going to be like for his relationship to be on the road. So we cut to this awkward scene where they're sitting at a restaurant together telling each other, I love you. I love you too. This is so natural.
Yeah, this is guy's character on the show. He's the guy with the girlfriend.
Taz tears down this one dude for being in atrocious condition, and we just got a montage of horrible tryouts. And he's explaining that he's never going to hold anyone's size against anyone because of his own issues he's had in his career trying to overcome what people believe are limitations for him and how tall he is. There was one girl reading a promo off of her wrist. We got these. We were introduced to Maven, who started flirting with Jacqueline.
Yeah, and Maven's, you know, personality, he wasn't the biggest guy. I'd say, like, the guy who looked most like a wrestler was that dude Jason, the dude with the girlfriend. But, I mean, Maven looked big enough, but he exuded a lot of confidence, and his personality really came out even in this little short bit.
Yeah, Maven, I mean, you're obviously watching in hindsight. You know that this guy wins, but just watching it, this guy certainly stood out to me. One guy noted how he was about to commit suicide, but Bret Hart said to never give up, and Bret Hart saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Joe, who I thought this girl was totally going to win this season when I watched this in 2001.
Because she has big boobs.
But beyond that, she was a great personality on this show, but zero athletic skill.
She just comes out and says, my goal is to do Playboy.
Yeah. She says, she makes it clear she's not a wrestling fan. Her brother got her into this, who is a fan. And I thought she was great, though. From a personality standpoint, she was tailor-made for a show like this.
Right. So she says all that. My goal is to really just do Playboy, not really stick around.
Dude, that probably helped her.
They hired her.
That probably helped her, being that this girl, we're not trying to find goddamn like a female worker in the ring. We want someone that guys are going to pay money to see naked because of our deal that we've got with Playboy.
Sure.
We met Daryl, Tom, who is pretty much just this prick heel in love with his body.
Oh, okay, yeah. This smug guy who looks very average.
And then we got some fun promos. We had Kenneth, the evil custodian, who cut the best promo of the day.
Yeah, this was a fun part where like guys had to make up their own characters and cut 30-second promos.
Which is almost, I can't say it's a recipe for disaster, but man.
Definitely is a recipe for disaster.
Well, I'm just saying, it's possible you can cut a great promo cold in 30 seconds where no one knows who you are. You have to create a character out of nowhere.
You have a job.
Yes.
What do you do?
I'm a custodian.
You see yourself up there on the TV monitors, and you're on the camera. How does that make you feel?
I like it.
Speak into the microphone and begin whenever you're ready.
Okay, my character's called the Evil Custodian. Nobody loves the custodian. I come and I sweep and vacuum for you when you're in the mood to go to the bathroom. I even disinfect it for you. This is the thanks I get. All who defy me shall be disinfected.
But some of these turned out well. This guy, Charbel, who had a whole backstory as Vince McMahon's lost son. And boy, did Kevin Dunn love this dude at first glance. We met Daniel the Wolfman, which was only funny because Taz is doing his testimonial on camera as this guy is cutting his promo in the ring in the background and starts howling. And Taz is just awesome, just running down this dude and just saying, you think the WWF would hire this guy? There isn't a goddamn chance, which is hilarious because today a character that believes he's a wolf doesn't even sound like the most preposterous gimmick of the current ones they have. So absolutely a character they would throw out, which shows where
this guy,
the character development has gone.
Do you imagine if like this dude cut a promo as like somebody like a Fandango, you know? You get laughed at.
Oh, there's so many.
This is a ballroom dancer.
Do you really think we'd put a fucking ballroom dancer out there on WWF television?
Mm-hmm.
Taz comes into the green room. And these people have been there all day long. Some are falling asleep. And he just cuts a promo on all of them.
Shut up. I'm pissed off. You people are here for a reason. You're lucky to be here. And from what I'm hearing, you're already bitching. If you're going to bitch and you're going to moan, there's the door. Get your shit. Get the fuck out. If you think this is going to be a walk, leave. If you guys get picked, you're screwed. Want to be a big star? You're going to pay. And you, hey, honey. Yo! Wake up. Am I boring you? You're sorry? Why don't you take your shit, your glamour ass, and get out? F***ing prima donnas.
Tells them to get their shit and leave if they're sick of waiting, and explains how it took them 10 years to get to the WWF, and you pieces of shit are bypassing the line. So Taz is certainly being leaned on to be the dick.
Bad cop.
Yes, the bad cop.
Yeah.
Other ones we meet, Taylor, who would make it onto the show, who is still married to Brian Kendrick.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Chris Nowinski, who is a very good promo. They explain his background training at Killer Kowalski's. He was like the only guy that would be picked that actually did have some kind of a background.
And they made it really clear that his goal for the next few weeks was to forget everything that he had learned.
Yes.
If you're going to be a wrestler, you let us train you.
We will. How are you to being deprogrammed? Yeah. That's literally what he was asked.
Yeah. And if you met, like, could you imagine, like, what it's like for other, you know, established talent? Like, could you imagine, like, anybody who had to come through the developmental system being given a talk like this?
It just would have been funny to be,
Samoa Joe.
Nowinski comes back and, Taz and Al Snow, it's like, so your wrestling training was also a waste of time? Is that what you're saying? It's just so funny. It's like the whole premise is that these performers, they worked all over the world for years and years before they finally got to the WWF. And you could argue what made them prepared for the WWF was everything they did outside of it that got them to the WWF, where certainly you have to modify certain things, but you have spent 10 years building a foundation that makes you easily adaptable to wherever you work at.
Mm-hmm.
But here it is. No, forget all that shit. Also, ODB and Jackie Gata trying out for the first season of The Ultimate Fighter.
Okay. Tough enough.
Whatever. Yeah. Ultimate Wrestling.
Yeah, I didn't notice that Jackie Gata, but yeah, ODB here.
Jackie Gata got to the final 25.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then would come back and win season two.
Right.
But ODB here, a much different looking ODB.
Yeah.
But with the same character.
She only has one line throughout the whole thing.
One dirty bitch.
Her line is one dirty bitch. And here it was almost portrayed like, wow, look at this crazy person calling herself one dirty bitch. And it actually turned into a character on TV.
There was also this girl from Australia who I never caught her name, but she just breaks down when they announced the final. They cut it down from 230 people down to the final 25, and she doesn't make it and starts crying. And earlier in the day, I mean, she's sitting with Bobby Joe and they're laughing and they're joking with everyone. And then when Bobby Joe gets picked over the Australian girl, she doesn't even watch wrestling. She's just here because of her tits. What a perfect representation of pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as someone gets something over you and behind their back, well, fuck her.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then they undergo drug testing and the MTV interviews, where we just got like a montage of like what looked to be the dumbest interviews, right down to Josh Matthews being asked about his masturbation rate.
Yeah, what was that?
Just like
it's four times, by the way.
Four times.
He masturbates like four times a day.
That's great. what else did we have? ODB was part of this final 25 as well. And yeah, we just got – these were your MTV interviews where we learned Nydia was a stripper. And Josh pumps it out four times a day. They're going to cut it down to 8 men and 5 women. So 13 people will be going into The House, a staple of any reality program, The House. And Kevin Dunn, you know, I would have personally loved to have watched Kevin Dunn just break down all of these because, I mean, he is the most influential person in that whole panel.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy will control the fate of many of these people. This was his department. This is kind of his baby he's overseeing, this Tough Enough concept. So I really, I mean, John Gaborik, no one knew who this guy was before Tough Enough. I mean, he was essentially, I mean, wasn't in a big position of power creatively or anything like that.
What was his role?
He was like a production guy. He would oversee like shoots on location, kind of that deal. And then he was thrust into this role as kind of like the unofficial host of Tough Enough.
Sort of like the Dana White.
Yeah, which was an odd choice of who they would put as in that role, that John Gaborik. For a company that is so cosmetically minded, it's just funny that John Gaborik was the guy they chose and was fine in the role. I mean, there was
nothing. What are you saying? He's not an attractive man?
I'm saying that this is a company way that took Jim Ross off of television. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they decided of all their available options, we are doing our first reality show on MTV, and they saw John Gaborik at the end of The Office.
You're absolutely right. It really is kind of odd because they have so many more established personalities that are available to them. You know, even somebody like a Jim Ross, but obviously a lot of people were probably busy doing the live show. But yeah, John Gaborik, not somebody that anybody would know.
If there's one quote that should stand the test of time of Kevin Dunn, in his talent evaluation, it was him stating, "This guy reminds me of Kurt Angle," as he watched Maven. Okay.
They're bald. I guess he was.
Please
bald.
Elaborate. In what element do you see Kurt Angle in Maven? I just what a random comparison.
What was he talking about? He was talking about like his attitude.
He just. We didn't get the context of the quote. It just, this guy reminds me of Kurt Angle. And I just saw that as a bizarre comparison point. Then they're going over who's going to make the final 13. And maybe even a better quote was John Gaborik, the man who is now the head of talent and television in TNA. He says, "Josh is great. There's no question about it." But he questions if Josh is special or not.
Very valid point.
Yeah. I mean, this was – if you're watching this, and especially in 2001 of what – I mean, if you're watching this show, your goal should be someone that can actually make it in the WWF.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty tall task for someone that has no background. So the look was a big part of this. And you look at Josh Matthews. I mean, this guy was smaller than Spike Dudley on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Spike Dudley at the time. He was Spike Dudley. Yeah. So – could you really see Josh Matthews being a worthwhile choice if at the end of the day you knew this guy was not going to be any asset to you?
Mm-hmm.
So Stephanie McMahon is introduced at WWF New York and they announce the final 13. Josh, Jason, Victoria, who is the stunt woman, Maven, Taylor, Chris Nowinski, Shadrick, Bobby Joe, Chris, Paulina, Nydia, Daryl, and Tom. We should describe Daryl.
Daryl was the guy who originally didn't make the cut, but didn't make the top 25. But then they came back a day later and thought, you know, Daryl's the big, out-of-shape dude who physically, you know, not – like big guy, but certainly not in shape. This is a fat guy. And they just, you know – passed on him, but the next day I suppose they were very taken aback, they really liked his personality, and so they decided to keep him. Plus I feel like there's an element of, you know, wanting to make an example out of, you know, like the big fat guy doing all these tough workouts.
And he was a great personality.
Yeah.
The early episodes. I mean, when he, as I recall, when he got eliminated, like the rating the next week, I believe, like went down. Like he was a key personality in those first couple of episodes, and certainly in episode two, which we're going to get into here.
Yeah.
I mean, it focused around this guy who was just this baby. He was essentially a baby.
Yeah, yeah. And we should note that, you know, not aside from the pro wrestling evaluators, they also had a number of people from MTV who are producing the show, thinking about, you know, that, those aspects, whether or not these would be entertaining people around the house.
And then they arrive at the house to end episode one, but only 12 of the 13 show up. Tom is not there, and he's had second thoughts about joining the show, so Greg is called to be the last-minute replacement. And that's how episode one ends, establishing your 13 going into the house.
I want to see the update on Tom. What happened to Tom?
What happened to Tom?
He made it into the house. And
he's just staring in a mirror somewhere.
Right before coming into the house, he's like, you know what? I actually just showed up on a whim. I didn't really want to do this anyway. He just leaves.
And that'll take us into episode two. Original air date, June the 28th of 2001. I seem to recall this did not air in Canada initially, and then it started on TSN like 2 or 3 months later,
right?
As I seem to recall. So I remember really wanting to see this show when it first debuted in June of that year, and we had to wait to see it. Not as easy to get episodes online as it is today. Mm-hmm. Whole different world in 2001. Had to get on my landline and call up my American friends and get some spoilers. Didn't know what was going on Tough Enough back in the day. So this is where we get into the training, now that we've established who the 13 are. So there is a focus on Chris Nowinski. First day of training features Al Snow, Jacqueline, and Tori. The other Tori, who I totally blanked, was part of this show.
What's her last name?
E.
Tori E.
Tori E. Yeah, she was just Tori.
Tori WWE. What's her actual name?
Terry Poach.
Poach, okay. Yeah.
P-O-C-H, I think. I assume that's how you would spell it.
Yeah, Terry Poach.
Terry Poach.
Yeah.
Already had a Terry. Couldn't have another Terry. Mm-hmm. So she was Tori. What a creative deviation. It's like, oh, we have a Terry. Another vowel. Tori. It was going to be Terry or Tori?
Or Turi.
Turi.
Teary.
Stupid. We learned back bumps first way. Flat back bumps, which this poor girl, Victoria. I mean, there was
She was a stunt woman.
She was a stunt woman who I thought would own at stuff like this. And yeah. She was the most awkward bump taker. And that's having watched Daryl just land on his hip repeatedly.
Yeah, for whatever reason, this woman just couldn't tuck her head. And
it was hard to watch.
Very hard to watch.
And you will not see this kind of stuff in Tough Enough. Like, down in NXT now, they have a lot of it. You're wearing headgear now. There's a padded ring when you're trying out stuff. I mean, you are going to see a much more sanitized – you are not going to see a woman probably concussing herself and then coming back the next day to train.
They basically show her, like, doing that, concussing herself multiple times. And Al Snow's just like – just shake it off. Just shake it off.
It was amazing.
And you know, it's not to blame Al Snow. I mean, nobody knew really the effects of it. And what's most interesting about all this is that Chris Nowinski is just standing right there watching all this happen.
You're right. Didn't even put that one together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting how they showcase the training. I mean, it's going to be a much different version. And you know, I'm not complaining either. Like, some of this stuff on this episode was just utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they then go to the WWF headquarters to train in the fitness center.
Tracks.
Mm-hmm. And Daryl is sick, blaming that damn sick baby who was on the plane. And we later learn he's got a fever of 100 degrees that he's battling through.
Oh, my.
100 degrees. Is that a fever?
I don't know. I do fair.
Like 98 is considered like normal. 100 is okay. Suck it up. I can tell you I've come to work with 100-degree fever in my day. Maybe I don't wrestle in mud, though, so anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Nowinski here starts teaching.
Oh, that's a no-no.
Boy. And Tori just says, hey, fucker, we're doing it the WWF way.
You're in the cult now. You forget that Killer Kowalski stuff you've learned. And Nowinski is just totally browbeaten here by Tori. Mm-hmm. As Nowinski is just going over like foot placement and just locking up as they're learning collar and elbow tie-ups.
I really would rather see like a Tough Enough with some of these call-ups that like they like. Could you imagine like whatever, like when Mystico was in developmental, and they put a camera on that, and
you call it deep program. You bring in all these guys, yeah, like Pac and it's like Mystico, and you're breaking them down,
yeah,
into WWF performers.
Yeah, hey Mystico, you forget how to do all that, okay? We teach you how to hurricanrana here.
As they're training at Trax, Stephanie comes over, and Victoria is just there by the water fountain, and Stephanie notes how she heard she's been having some trouble taking back bumps, and Victoria just tries to like nonchalantly say, yeah, I've just been having some trouble, and then just breaks down crying. It's so frustrating, and like Stephanie came across so likable here. Like,
oh,
this,
yeah.
For all, like, she's, you know, we talk about how great she is as a heel performer. I mean, you watch this, it's like this girl felt so genuinely nice.
She felt so innocent. Like, she felt like, you know, the cute, you know, girl next door here. And certainly,
this was like pre-marketing and buzzword and branding. Stephanie was just took over her brain.
This was sort of the character she portrayed on TV too. You know, just kind of this very young, naive girl who's just, you know, completely innocent. But like over the past decade, she's certainly grown into, you know, a woman. You know, and somebody who has she had confidence here too. But now it's like it's like on her dad's level.
She could have been a contestant on Tough Enough.
Absolutely.
Earlier enough in her career. I mean, could have seen how she... That would have been an awesome reality series.
Honestly, I would much rather see a Tough Enough with people that I know. Like people that, you know, that I already have some type of association with.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I'm sure the USA Network, they love this idea of just everyday fans and social media engagement and audition videos. But I mean, you have a whole developmental system where there's like 95 guys down there, mm-hmm, something in that neighborhood. It's like, we couldn't take 13 of those guys that have already learned all
the same thing, like
the basics.
I mean, yeah, we said that about Tough Enough too, or sorry, The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, they did try that with the comeback season.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that didn't work as well.
I just feel in 2015, like, I don't need an episode. Wow. Oh, that's
bumps.
Back bumps. Wow. Yeah. Like, is that really novel in any sense? Like,
no.
Let's fast forward. Let's talk about promos.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about character development. Let's talk about certain topics that I think the average fan is pretty, in 2015, is much more aware of than 2001.
Could you imagine if, like, the first episode or the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, they
got politicking?
They hired people who had no fight experience whatsoever, like people who didn't even know how to throw a punch. This is what a jab is, you know.
And they've got to do promos as well,
and then they have to fight at the end.
Could you imagine like the UFC version where it's like they're having them sit down and it's like, okay, you're going to be interviewed by John Anik, and you're going to call out your next opponent. And they're all going through and saying, I'll fight whoever Joe Silva wants me to fight. And that's kind of the template they go by, where you instead of trying to be over the top,
mm-hmm,
you try to be as vanilla as possible, which you typically get from the lower level fighters.
Yeah. They judge their tweets.
What's your Twitter followers like? Yeah. What's your Instagram game like? They have a day off. They all go out for dinner, which was noteworthy only because Nydia, the drug dealer,
mm-hmm,
passes out painkillers to all of them.
This was amazing to me. Like, there's no way you will get a scene like this at all.
I can't believe we got this in 2001.
I can't believe they even kept this on the network edition, you know? Like, there's no reason to even... I mean, I suppose the reason is just to show how grueling the whole training was, but a scene where they're literally taking painkillers at the dinner table.
Wonderful. We're going to mix it with alcohol on top of it, probably.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So that's how they dealt with day one of back bumps. And they wake up the next morning to Taz arriving at the house
in an XFL jacket.
And they were in a what's it called?
What?
The big car.
La limo? Escalade?
No, no, no. It wasn't an Escalade.
A
Hummer. A Hummer.
Oh,
yes. Arrived in a Hummer. Okay. That's what I was looking for. And Taz just, I mean, this was totally designed for, like, the commercial of this week on Tough Enough.
Yeah.
Just yells at everyone, tears down a Bill Goldberg poster off the wall, which was the hidden gem of this episode. What the fuck is this?
Wrong company.
Which was funny because that company didn't exist anymore.
At the time, though, it was probably around.
I guess they would have filmed it probably 2000? While WCW was still going on. Yeah. Then he just sits them all down, and it was just like sound clip after sound clip from Taz. It was like press a button, and out comes the Taz line.
When I'm training you people, I will give you the same amount of respect you give me. If you have a question, it better be a good one. Because if it's a stupid one, I will kick your ass in more ways than one. I'm a but I'm fair. Your mouth off to me, it'll be the worst thing you ever did in your life. It's a promise. Don't act stupid. You're now taking the first step to becoming one of us. We're going outside now. And all I can tell you is if you don't believe in God, start.
Taz, he was great here.
Just if you have a question, it better be a good one.
Yeah,
I'm a prick, but I'm fair. Don't act stupid. And the big line, that was the line of the year maybe on that show that everyone repeated. If you don't believe in God, start.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't question the hiring of Taz for this role.
For
this
some reason, they took him off. I guess he was doing more announcing the next year.
I think so, yeah, because they brought in Chavo in season two, who certainly didn't.
Wasn't Bill DeMott there to take his place?
Bill DeMott and Chavo were on season two, because I think Tori was gone as well.
Right. Bill DeMott was actually great in this role, too. Maybe a little too realistic.
Yeah. So then he takes them out, and they proceed to have wrestling matches in pig shit.
Mud wrestling. Yeah.
Which, given the time frame, the women would actually need to prepare for stuff like this.
That's right. It's actually relevant to what they would do. But, I mean, again, this is another one of those reality TV things that, much like the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, all those challenges, all those stupid challenges that had nothing to do with your actual training. I really can't imagine this mud wrestling serving much purpose other than to create some, you know, good-looking TV.
This was dumb, but then it became stupid when Paulina, who, I mean, based on her size, I mean,
she's the 6'3" girl.
Like, this is a girl that of them, and especially given where the Divas division was at that time, I mean, this girl at least had something. Like, and here she is fucking her knee up because she lands badly on a hidden rock.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Like, they're wrestling full force here. Like, they're being encouraged to wrestle full force. They're not, you know, being safe. And this is like, what, the third day? And wow, who would have expected somebody got hurt falling onto a rock hidden in this mud pile?
And Taz just basically says that everyone's got to toughen up. People can get hurt any night of the week. Really? Because when was the last time that the human suplex machine was dropping dudes on rocks in the mud?
Yeah, when was the last time? When was the last time Stone Cold Steve Austin had to go through this?
It's so funny. It's like they'll look back at shitty ideas WCW had, like the Junkyard Battle Royal, and how it was just so stupid and guys got hurt. Ditto for Brawl for All. And then you see stuff like this where it's, oh, this is how we toughen people up. This was so stupid. But then Taz cuts a big promo on people cutting their fingernails. How appropriate given Joe Rogan giving the exact same rant at UFC 186 over the weekend.
Sure.
Taz and Rogan, not fans of long, germ-infested fingernails.
Big and really important.
Gotta cut that shit.
No.
Then we go on a bit of a jog as Taz is in the back of this truck egging on the contestants, and he tells them he gives them instructions that this is going to be a brisk walk, no need to run. So everyone's getting ready to start, and it's Darryl who's like, brisk walk, no need to run, remember what he said, as if to tell everybody we're walking this, folks. Like, Darryl just horribly out of shape and just can't keep up with everyone. Taz cuts a promo on him, and I can't even remember who it was, but just one of the guys just says he hates this guy. He's just a big baby, and he's out of shape, and everyone knows it. And then we go back to the house, and Daryl's complaining about his fever. Paulina's knee is all fucked up. Taylor and Victoria probably both have concussions at this point. And it ends with Victoria saying, I'm having second thoughts about this. But that's probably just the concussion, because her brain is literally bleeding probably at this point. So that's how we end the episode. Episode 3 coming up soon.
Yeah.
She literally was having second thoughts, probably seeing double.
I was just amazed, you know, looking back at some of the things that they were putting people through. But I, you know, at the time, it didn't really seem out of the ordinary. It just seemed like a more of a grueling physical thing. But especially in light of all the Bill DeMott stuff, I can't imagine them going through half of this today. But we'll see. I thought these were both fun shows. The first episode, though, played a lot more just like a generic, you know, reality show casting call, but sort of in a pro wrestling costume on top of that. But I thought what really stood out about that was just how they're able to talk about the process of, you know, cutting promos and talking about pro wrestling in a very honest way, not really trying to hide anything underneath buzz terms or kayfabe. And at the time, I thought it was, you know, quite unexpected and novel.
Easy to watch. I mean, 30-minute episodes, I think a good length for this. And I think if nothing else, the most jarring for me was just the training techniques and how different this next Tough Enough is going to be, even from the one of a few years ago. I think it's going to be radically different. And I mean, they're going to be incorporating a lot of live elements to it. Yeah. It's not going to be like they're set up in a house. I think it's much more going to be kind of I don't know.
I'm really hoping that if there's any changes that pro wrestling, especially the WWE, can get over this whole craving for legitimacy and toughness that these shows seem to have had ever since, you know, something like this. Ever since for as long as pro wrestling has existed, I think, you know, it's been trying to wash away the stigma of, oh, this is fake, this stuff doesn't hurt, so we're going to really push these normal people through really grueling exercises to show how tough pro wrestling actually is, when I think we're above that, you know.
So there you go. Episodes 1 and 2 of Tough Enough. I don't know if we'll be going back and revisiting this season, but
maybe not this season, but, you know, we might do other seasons.
Yeah, and certainly with the upcoming series, there'll certainly be curiosity for it. And
yep.
And who's involved in it, both trainers and performers.
Mm-hmm.
Should be interesting. All right, well, next week, Wei, we're going to get back to a traditional pro wrestling show. And once again, we're going back to the request thread, which you can submit your votes of what you want to see us review at lawradio.proboards.com in the pro wrestling section. And what are people saying they want to hear us review?
Well, appropriately enough, we have one request for a King of the Ring pay-per-view.
Which just finished up last night.
Just finished up. What a King of the Ring it was.
I don't know if it's going to help them.
You don't think so?
We'll see.
I think it'll...
I hope they don't go hard with the King gimmick. I don't know if he really fits.
I don't think they'll do that.
The royalty, you know?
Anyway, King of the Ring, 1993.
Ooh.
At an overwhelming...
The first pay-per-view version.
The first King of the Ring. That's right. Or the first pay-per-view King
The first pay-per-view version. They did them at like live events for a few years prior. But yeah, this was the first time they turned it into a pay-per-view.
I'm surprised we haven't done this show yet.
Why?
Have we actually – can we double check to make sure we – I'm pretty sure.
We did the Art Donovan year.
Ah, okay.
And we did the horrible King Mabel one. So they were off to a great start.
So King of the Ring 1993, if you don't know who wins it, Bret Hart participates in this.
Spoiler. Yeah.
So that
is that safe? We're 22 years removed.
Anyway, King of the Ring 1993, watch it. Leave your feedback.
Everyone remembers how – Hulk Hogan and Yokozuna ended. I think it'll be very enjoyable to go back and watch this, but don't blink, as Hulk Hogan did. All right, King of the Ring 1993, that's coming up next week on Review Away. In the meantime, you can always go to liveaudiowrestling.com, where we are putting out shows on an hourly basis, it feels like. We'll be back. Bauer and Pollock returns later on tonight. We'll have What's Next, Review and Impact, which is Saturday nights. And then Sunday night, it's Live Audio Wrestling, 11 p.m. Eastern time. It is week 2 of our Ring of Honor contest, where you have a chance to win tickets to both the Friday and Saturday night New Japan shows coming up May 15th and 16th, and have lunch with Red Dragon. So a hell of a prize. surprise.
Are you guys going to Red Lobster?
We are probably not going to Red Lobster.
If Steve Carino shows up, you could have Coronas with Steve Carino.
Oh my God! Can you go through the whole roster by next week and have specific menu items for each wrestler?
I'm trying to think of one for Michael Elgin. Don't know.
We could go somewhere near
Belgian waffles.
Belgian with Elgin. Belgian. No. Oh boy.
Okay.
All right, that's going to wrap up Review Away. Thanks for tuning in. You can follow Way at Way0937. I am at I am John Pollock. And that's all. Goodbye, folks. Are you tough enough?
Yeah. Great.
Jason, you want some? It's ibuprofen for pain. Yeah.